a discussion on quantum spin liquids. Well, the first step, I guess, is to try and define what a quantum spin liquid is, or have an attempt at this. So really, a quantum spin liquid...
So would you make the...
So there are entangled states of interacting spin systems. So in particular, what they're not is they're not product states. So in the sense that so not product states. That's basically what being entangled means. So if you had a lattice, you could never write your spin liquid state as a product of anything you could not. Split your system into local objects like this, which could be spins, valence bonds, or anything that's actually local. And you couldn't deform your system into anything that actually looked like this. So this is not what it is. But instead, it is a large quantum superposition of such a state, of such states. So on top of a state like this, what you would be adding is other coverings, say, of this type of state, etc. So in this way, you can indeed create an entangled state. And what I just drew here, this would be, if these guys were singlets, this would just be a valence bond solid, whereas this kind of superposition would be a resonating valence bond, which was first proposed by Anderson. In more colloquial terms, what it means is that the spins fluctuate down to a zero temperature. Spins fluctuating down to zero temperature, it's kind of related to maybe the old definition of spin liquids that people have heard about a lot, which is that there is no order in a spin liquid. But this is actually too restrictive. So it's often used, and Radu will discuss this further, it's often used as a characteristic of a spin liquid in experiment. People don't see order in any of the experimental measurements that they make. They often claim that it's a spin liquid, but that this is really not enough. Because what you need is you need evidence in addition to this for fluctuating spins. So in particular, it's not a spin glass. It's not just a frozen spin arrangement. Large entanglement does not prohibit order. At least some order. So you could have the coexistence of both. And one, another characteristic, you know, more constructive characteristic instead of negative characteristic, is that you have fractionalization. Okay. So entanglement. And if you have any questions, I mean, I guess maybe it's too basic at this point.
As a question. So, but can you think of? You said it's not a product state. Mm-hmm. So, is there a way to think of a scale where, if it is a product state, but it's not a coarse grain, and then a long scale, so it becomes a product?
No.
Meaning, what I'm describing is not a spin liquid, but something that's kind of continuously coming close to a spin liquid, where if you look at short scales, it looks like a disordered state, but then, and so it has all these fluctuations, it's very non-product, but then when you get to, when you coarse grade to larger scales, then it becomes...
No, so at any scale, it's not a product state. I mean, you can't deform the system at all into a product state.
Right, so no, I'm not
at
saying...
At any scale.
I think he's asking the opposite.
So yeah.
You have something which is a
product state.
Well, which is not a spin liquid. Generically, it's not really exactly a product state. It looks approximately like one.
So something that's a product, something that's on short scale. So I'm asking about a state that's not a spin liquid, but it's very complicated. All the way from microscopic scale, you know, lattice scale, to some, you know, even some fairly large length scale, and only beyond that, after I quirk it beyond that, I start to recognize actually it looks okay. More like your picture. But
so maybe I can answer this question in a more concrete way in terms of fractionalization, which are these quasi particles that exist in a quantum spin liquid. So if you have a quantum spin liquid, these particles are deconfined up to any length scale. So I guess if you had a very a state, I don't know if very complicated is very well defined, but you could imagine that the particles could separate, that it would not cost too much energy to separate the particle on some length scale, but that past some length scale, it would just cost too much energy to separate these quasi-particles. I don't know if that's...
Right, so I guess, yeah, so this, terminologically, you would maybe up, like, down to some low temperatures, it would look like a spin liquid, but then it crosses over to some, it would finally order at some lowest temperature, which may be or lowest energies where you're now probing the longest scales.
I think they're going to get to this sort of question. Maybe we should postpone it. Yeah. Is there a chance to get past the introduction?
Okay.
I'm moderating.
Yeah.
Sorry, is it possible to have a spin liquid without fractionalization? Do they exist, or have to be fractionalized?
Sorry, I didn't hear the question. Can we hear the question?
Is it possible to have a spin liquid without this fractionalization, or are they the same thing?
So I don't really want to answer this kind of very general questions, because maybe they are very sick models. But really, a characteristic of this quantum spin liquid is typically that there are fractional excitations, and there is a gauge field between with which the fractional quasi particles interact.
Can you give an example, experimental or imaginary?
It's coming. It's all coming. Yeah. So one of the characteristics is of entanglement, which is that it allows fractionalization. Single spin flips. They are not good quasi particles. So if you create a spin flip, you're not going to see a sharp mode in experiment. But instead, locally, create several, so typically two quasi-particles by flipping a spin, if you spin is well defined. Okay. And now these quasi-particles are good quasi-particles, and they can move, they can be separated any distance. And so if you could, if it's a system where you spin is a good quantum number, these quasi-particles would, for example, carry spin half, whereas, you know, a spin flip would be carrying a spin one. And these kinds of particles, living on their own, cannot exist if the system is not entangled. So, where to look for quantum spin liquids? Well, typically, I mean, most of the systems, and that's really the big challenge, most of the systems we know are they actually magnetically ordered. So instead of asking how do we create a spin liquid, what we can ask, the first question you can ask is how do you destabilize a magnetically ordered state? And that's with frustration. So should have a frustrated spin system will typically destabilize magnetic order because, you know, pairwise interactions won't be satisfied. And in particular, frustration, you know, one way to think about the role that it plays is that frustration can induce at the classical level degeneracy, and by making a quantum superposition of all these degenerate states quantum mechanically, you can get a spin liquid. The energy can be lowered. Yeah, I think that's the end of my part.
Okay. They go back and forth.
Yeah, we go back.
Getting increasingly specific.
Right, so candidate models that people have looked for realizations of spin liquids are those that show strong frustration effects. And they include, for example, triangular antiferromagnets, Kagome antiferromagnet, and we've had a talk as part of the conference by Yang Li, showing experiments on a spin half Kagome antiferromagnet to look for this physics. So experimentally, yeah, so typically the experimental recipe to look for spin liquids is to establish that there is no spontaneous magnetic long-range order. And this is, if you do have long-range order, there's signatures, very clear signatures in susceptibility, in NMR, in muon spin rotation, relaxation experiments, if you have a static fields characteristic with long range order, in NMR there's some peak splitting. Then one could look for characteristic signatures of fractionalization in dynamical probes like inelastic neutron scattering. Typically one looks for observation of a continuum of scattering. As neutrons locally, Ki, Kf, would flip a spin, and so they create locally a delta Sz is plus minus one excitation, so a spin flip. And if this fractionalizes, then one sees a continuum. In systems with magnetic long range order, then the spin flip would hop coherently and would lead to a sharp delta function peak into the dynamical response. Also, signature of these unusual excitations could come in thermodynamic measurements, such as specific heat. where you probe the thermodynamics of a gas of thermally excited quasiparticles. and for example, in the triangular organic materials, one sees experimentally a specific heat that's linear in temperature for an insulator, as one would see in the case of a Fermi surface. And in this case, the proposal is that this Fermi surface is actually due to spin-ons. And also thermal transport, one can also have some unusual behavior from these fractionalized quasiparticles. Now, typically, it's very challenging from one specific experiment to get unambiguous evidence, and it's helpful to have a combination of all of those measurements together, because one issue that often one has to face experimentally is that sometimes there are structural defects, impurities, and so on, and they could mask the behavior of the pure system. And you've heard in the talk on the Kagome system how one needs to be quite sophisticated in order to try and attempt to isolate the effect of impurities as opposed to the pure system. Also, what's very helpful experimentally is actually to probe the behavior not just of the system at one point in parameter space, but actually to look at phase diagrams and trends. And phase diagrams in magnetic field are particularly helpful because the field comes in as a well-known Zeeman term, so they can be modeled theoretically, and what one wants to see experimentally is transitions in and out of the quantum spin liquid phase. One wants to see how the magnetic field, if it's strong enough, can completely quench the quantum fluctuations and stabilize more classical phases. So have experimentally a control parameter to make the physics go away, and then the way it disappears gives you information about the properties of the quantum spin liquid. experimentally, one can use other tuning parameters, such as pressure. This can change the relative magnitudes of various exchange terms in the Hamiltonian, and this could also induce phase transitions in and out of the spin liquid phase. So it's helpful in general to do a whole range of measurements, and really one of the challenges for theory is that not only to solve sort of a pure model, but really understand the whole range of behavior when one goes away from that limit, what kind of phenomenology develops, what's the mechanism of transitions out of the spin liquid phase? Can one have situations in which, for example, you have a very rich structure bound states of these fractional excitations? What's the experimental signature for that? we really need to have guides and predictions for qualitative features to look for in experiments. And then quantitative as well. So I'm passing on back to Vasile now.
May I ask this samarium hexaboride, which I heard at this meeting, does it go under the umbrella of quantum spin liquids, or it's you consider it separate? Do you know what?
Maybe Leon, do you want to comment on this? You probably know about that.
Well, okay. I mean, the kind of physics that some experimental groups are proposing would place it in the category of spin liquids.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a neutral Fermi.
An insulator with a neutral Fermi surface would certainly classify as a spin.
So there are quasi particles, but it's. Kind of different. It's more like excitons with a spin which make a Fermi liquid. It's okay. I find it different.
So that they have different microscopic physics, for sure, right? That's the way this has been presented is you have a system of local moments. All electrons, even microscopically, kind of localized. But in terms of macroscopic, long distance, low energy physics, I would consider that the opposed state there is spin liquid. So the mechanism there, if that's in fact the case, is certainly far from clear. Interesting.
So now we decided to be more specific because basically kind of each topic here, you know, each different material, each different kind of class of spin liquid that exists could be a discussion in itself. So we decided to be more specific and talk about Ketayev, the specific case of Ketayev honeycomb spin liquids. So for two reasons, one of them is that it's a remarkable, so the pure model proposed by Ketayev is a remarkable model which is exactly soluble and basically settled the case on whether or not spin liquids could even exist in principle. That settled it, and the answer is yes. And the second reason we focused on this is because there's a lot of activity experimentally. One is, might be close to realizing, to finding such a spin liquid in an experiment. So the model proposed by Ketayev is a model on the honeycomb lattice, spin halves on the honeycomb lattice. And the honeycomb lattice has three types of bonds, different types of bonds, which is, you can label by X, Y, Z. And the model proposed by Ketayev was a model of an anisotropic model of spin halves. Where the constants Jx, Jy, Jz might be the same, or they might be different. The model is frustrated because on every bond, on every site, Sx doesn't commute with Sy, etc. And the remarkable feature of this model is actually that it can be solved exactly by rewriting the spins as in terms of four Majorana fermions. So each spin, so say SIX, would be described by a product of, would be rewritten in terms of a product of two Majorana fermions, CIX and CI, which doesn't carry a label here. And the same for the two other spin components. And this model is a spin liquid, and this CI Majorana operator here is actually a good quasi-particle of the model. And in the model where the Jx, Jy, Jz are all equal, the model is gapless. So this system, the ground state, contains gapless. The excitations, the fractional excitations, are gapless Majorana mode, which is here Ci, Okay. Two types of fluxes. Fluxes which live now, so each CI lives on the site. And the two types of fluxes live on the hexagons here, and they are gapped. Gapped and dispersionless. Gapped and dispersionless. They cannot hop.
Can I just clarify? So there are four types of Majorana fermions?
Yes, because for each component here, you have, it's multiplied by a CIX. I could put the label down here. And then there is one common one, CI. And it's the common one here, CI, that is this Majorana fermion, which is gapless, with a nilinear dispersion here at the K points. Okay. And this model actually could draw its phase diagram. So the point here, this is the point where Jx equals Jy equals Jz. That's the point that's most relevant to experiment, and it's the point where it is gapless. If you go here in other directions, so setting some of the constants larger than others, so this gapless phase is stable, but then it becomes gapped, and it is still the spin liquid with basically the same characteristics, except now the Majorana modes are gapped, but it's still this same type of spin liquid. Okay. You can also apply a magnetic field, and I think Radu will talk about this in more detail. And if you apply a magnetic field, you also get a gapped spin liquid. But now the instead of getting the abelian quasi particles here, you get non abelian quasi particles.
So I have two questions. One is the C's that are the Majoranas that are labeled by X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
Those guys are gapped. Let's say inside the...
Well, those guys are not good quasi-particles.
Oh, they're not good quasi-particles. Okay.
But the fluxes, which are made out of these CI mu's, are gapped. Mm-hmm. So the flux operators you could construct out of these CI mu's.
And the other question is the C's, the ones that are not labeled, mm-hmm. what filling are there at? And what's the connection between filling and maybe...
Well, so in the ground state, you are here, so there are no Majoranas in the ground state. But the Majoranas are gapless.
Okay, yes, the gapless. Okay.
Majorana doesn't have a conserved number, so it's not meaningful.
Yes.
How it's filled.
So this is, this is a model, and it exists, so it's consistent with symmetries. But in a realistic model, this term doesn't actually come alone. So this term exists, but it doesn't come alone. And so in real materials, you would have extra terms like Heisenberg, some other anisotropic terms. You might have further neighbor. You can have all sorts of things that exist in the material. And so the real challenge, and as soon as you add these perturbations here, the model is no longer exactly soluble. Okay. And so a challenge in theory is to actually figure out what happens when these terms are present, which is relevant for experiment. Does the system, how long does the system survive? So you know that this spin liquid being a spin liquid and basically topological is stable up to some values of perturbations, but it's going to stop, it's not going to survive throughout the whole phase diagram when you add these terms. And so the challenge in theory is not that the model is not exactly soluble anymore. What happens when you add these couplings, these extra couplings? The beautiful thing, however, is that you can show, so this was due to Jacquelli and Kaliulin, that in a number of systems, when you actually have exchange paths that are the right way, so it's these 90-degree bond super exchange paths, that this model actually comes out of a microscopic good enough Kanamori approach. So these terms are expected to actually really exist in experiment, and in fact, there are numerous materials now where it's been shown that this Kitaev exchange terms are substantial in these materials.
So can you say what the ratio is roughly?
That keeps it stable?
Well, the best material, well, that's a theory, I guess, theoretical question, but experimentally, what is the best material that approximates the Kitaev ratio between Heisenberg and the...
Well, so I think Radu is going to be the subject of most of what Radu is going to talk about.
What about theoretically? What's the...
Well, so theoretically, there's been exact diagonalization done on the Kitaev for Heisenberg model, and the Kitaev phase is stable both for both signs of the Kitaev exchange. So thinking about setting all the JZs equal to one another, but in a very narrow region, so you can't add very much Heisenberg term. I don't know how many percent. I'm sure somebody knows here. Sorry?
Up to 20%.
So up to 20%, but for one sign, I guess.
For ferromagnetic.
But is the phase diagram, I guess, the same? If it's pure Kitaev, does it matter with the sign?
No, it's the same phase.
So it matters how robust it is.
But
there is a mapping between the pure Kitaev, ferromagnetic and anti-ferromagnetic. But if you add perturbations, you've lost that. And the ferromagnetic is more robust, apparently, than the anti-ferromagnetic. Mm-hmm.
To perturbations.
Yeah.
I suppose in experiment, they're probably mostly anti-ferromagnetic, right?
No.
Actually, the consensus is that it's ferromagnetic in all of the materials. Almost everybody agrees with that.
And there are kind of sharp questions that, well, that one can ask is, but maybe it's better to ask them after Radu talks, but you know, most of the materials actually order, well, they all order anyway, in zero field. The question is there are some claims that there are signatures of the Mariana fermions at higher energy, even in systems where you expect the perturbations to be very, very large. So, you know, one question is why might one expect these Majoranas to survive to very large couplings at higher energy, and is there even a sharp meaning to asking about whether the Kitaev phase is stable at high energy when the system is actually ordered at low energy. But I guess we'll discuss this probably after Radu tells us a lot of things.
Okay.
So maybe I should do what?
So I can give an overview of a number of candidate Kitaev materials. So maybe the material that really started this experimental search is sodium iridate. And here, the iridium, so the key ingredients here that make this a good candidate are the fact that iridium has a strong spin orbit coupling, and you need that in order to have these anisotropic exchanges here. And here, iridium is in a near-cubic oxygen octahedron environment. And in this case, if you have a hole in a T2G level with spin orbit coupling, the effective magnetic ground state is J effective a half, which is strongly entangled with spin and orbital. And so if you have two of those octahedra sharing an edge, then super exchange through these two oxygen paths, it's been shown that to leading order leads to an almost cancellation of the Heisenberg term and stabilization of the exchange perpendicular to the plane of the bond. Okay. So then if you have three octahedra meeting at a point, then you're going to have three Ising axes orthogonal. That's really the key idea why, how you can get Kitaya physics here. So you have threefold coordination, edge sharing octahedra, and there's the super exchange through these two oxygens that have some quantum interference and stabilize the Ising exchange. So this material orders magnetically in a zigzag order pattern. So looking at the honeycomb plane, spins are ordered, the ferromagnetic chains run like this, and these have an alternating pattern. Okay. So this is called zigzag order. Okay. So the stacking of layers picks up a unique direction, and the symmetry is no longer threefold, so it orders in a single zigzag domain. However, the distortion is very small, and at temperatures above the transition, there are actually spin fluctuations at all of the 6 points corresponding to zigzags, and the sharp experimental signature of the presence of Kitaev interactions is that the scattering, so the scattering here at these two endpoints would correspond to zigzag order propagating along the vertical direction. So this will be, if I put Kitaev axes here, this will be x, y, and z. So diffuse scattering is seen experimentally that's polarized along z at these points and is polarized here along y and is polarized here along x. So this type of spin momentum locking is incompatible with the Heisenberg Hamiltonian. And that's precisely what you would expect if you had Kitaev coupling that locks in the spin fluctuation direction with the momentum direction. So not very much is known about the phase diagram of this material in applied magnetic field, as one has to apply quite large field to affect the magnetic order. But in other materials, much more is known. So if we move on to the lithium iridate now.
Sorry, one question about this material.
Yes.
Can we learn something about the Kitaev model here? So other than having the SX, SY, SZ, anisotropy, is there evidence for these
so,
energy for the, that decided that there
is most can be learned from samples that you can grow in large single crystals and you can do detailed experiments. It turns out that this is very hard to grow in large single crystals. And also, for neutron scattering, iridium is a very strong absorber. We have done some experiments on this material to see low energy spin waves, but you know, there's a limitation how quantitative and detailed information you can get because of the sample constraints.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I didn't quite understand, you know, the K-types exchanger. So the configuration you drew, I see the JZ bond, and I see that it's what the SZs are ordered. But how do I think of that simultaneously? You have the, you're seeing also the other ones, the other component, the other exchanger.
Oh, so if this was a honeycomb model with full three-fourths symmetry, the magnetic structure actually breaks that three-fourths symmetry and picks one direction.
Oh.
And there's three equivalent zigzags.
Oh, I see. So there's actually split. Rather than, so this observed phase is actually an ordered phase.
It's an ordered phase.
Non-spin
yeah.
liquid phase.
That's right. All of them are ordered phases.
But it demonstrates yeah. that you're. So what is it in relation to that triangle that Lucille drew? Like in terms of that phase diagram, how do you get the? Is it because of Heisenberg exchange?
So we go out to the plane here, or we're somewhere here. So this point is nearby, and does affect the properties of the ordered phase, but it's really not sufficiently strong to suppress the order and stabilize the true liquid. That is actually a challenge in all the materials that I've discussed. So lithium iridate, it turns out actually forms in three different structural polytypes. One of them is like is the honeycomb layered one, but also there are versions of it in which you have a generalization of the honeycomb structure to three dimensions. So you can imagine that you start off with a honeycomb sheet, and then you have another one in here, and then you now cut here and cut there, and then pivot around this vertical line, take this ribbon out of the plane, and make the connection of these points with the next layer up here. So basically you're going to have a structure of alternating honeycomb ribbons. And you can also do this exercise by cutting every single vertical bond, and then taking the chains and doing this. So, and remarkably, one can grow single crystals of all of these three polytypes. Okay, so that's alpha, beta, and gamma. So this is the honeycomb, and these are 3D versions. Now, all these three order in an incommensurate spiral structure. Where the magnetic Bragg peaks are actually, for the layered one, are at these positions. And one feature of this spiral order is that on every nearest neighbor bond, spins are counter-rotating. And that, again, cannot be explained by Heisenberg model, but the K-type interaction is essential to explain that. So K-type actually leads to counter-rotation. So one of those, the beta phase, is potentially very interesting because in applied pressures, one can suppress altogether the magnetic ordering. And so these are experiments from Takagi's group. Above of order 1 gigapascal or so, there's no longer any magnetic ordering. And so the question is, what's actually the phase there? One attraction of looking at the system is that it is structurally very clean. So there are no structural defects, as you might have, for example, in the layered materials, where you can have stacking faults and also inter-site mixing. This particular structure just doesn't allow that. So it's very clean structurally. So what's known about the system is that the distortion and depression happens in a particular way, and ab initio calculations, taking that distortion into account, predict that if in zero field you start off with Kitaev and some other perturbations, gamma and Heisenberg, then at high pressure, this gamma term, which is a term that for the Z bond, it couples Sx, Sy, plus Sy, Sx. So the proposal is that this gamma term becomes dominant, and there are some theoretical models that in the region of large gamma, you could also have a spin liquid. Not much is known about that, but certainly it's a very interesting scenario. So, and this is actively pursued. So, in terms of phase diagramming magnetic field, both of these three-dimensional versions, both beta and gamma, if you apply a magnetic field along a Kitaev axis, okay, this happens to be the orthorhombic crystal axis, but it's really, it will be one of these. It will be what we would call Z here, for example. Then the spiral order is suppressed relatively quickly. So that's a spiral at some 3 tesla or so. This is about 40 Kelvin. And there's signature of this transition, for example, in magnetization, and in specific heat coming this way, but specific heat coming down this way only shows a broad beam. So this is some correlated quantum paramagnet.
Why is it not a spin liquid?
So it has no long-range magnetic order. However, if you go to the infinite field, you expect to be fully polarized. And this is a trivial field. And one cannot continuously connect a spin liquid to a product state. There has to be a phase transition. And so far, nobody's seen an additional phase transition. But certainly, you know, maybe this is something to look for, and I'll discuss that more in the context of ruthenium chloride. Much more is known there.
What are the values of the exchange constants? What is the scale?
So, these are not known to the same level that they are known in ruthenium chloride, again, because inelastic experiments are difficult. I don't recall now. I think the curie Weiss constant is of order 100 Kelvin also.
So you might have to go far away.
So, now, as soon as you have some anisotropic couplings like the Kitaevs, then spin is not conserved along any direction. And so, in an applied magnetic field, the magnetization will increase asymptotically. It will only reach saturation at infinitely large fields. So, it's fairly possible to just have a transition from the magnetic order to the quantum paramagnet that's adiabatically connected to the fully polarized state. A more exotic scenario would be that there's some spin liquid region here, but that would have to have some additional signatures. I should mention here, also in the context of the iridates, we've had a talk as part of the conference, again from Peter Takagi's group, where hydrogen is intercalated in between the honeycomb layers. So this is in alpha lithium iridate. So this forms stacked honeycomb layers, and lithium is in here as separator and also in the center of the honeycombs. Now, if hydrogen is replaced only for these lithiums, then one ends up with hydrogen intercalated structure, and this one doesn't show magnetic order at all. So this hydrogen intercalated is another candidate spin liquid, shows no long range order. In various thermodynamic probes, the susceptibility increases as a maximum and so plateaus like this. No sharp anomaly, indicating possibly gapless states there. And there's some unusual scaling of the specific heat with temperature and field.
Yeah, so this, the quantum paramagnet, so it has a, it has finite magnetic susceptibility?
So the magnetization, if I was to plot the magnetization here, it increases, has a sort of anomaly in the derivative, and this keeps on going up.
Right, so there doesn't have to be a phase transition, does there?
This breaks some symmetry, the spiral order.
No, I mean from quantum paramagnet to trivial state.
Oh, this is addressed, it's a paramagnet. It's a polarized state dressed by fluctuations.
Right. So
it's adiabatically connected. So in the fully polarized phase, the excitations will be, so all the spins are polarized by the field.
Product state.
You flip one that pops because of exchange, you would have a sharp mode that has some dispersion because of the exchange. And then that sharp mode will come down in as you lower the field, would come down, and you know, one conventional mechanism to get this transition is that the gap to this closes, and that's how you build up a crack field. So this is just a terminology that sometimes used to designate that this breaks no symmetries, but it's not a polarized, it's not truly a polarized state because it has some fluctuations in it, because the magnetization is not yet saturated. So there are some fluctuations that reduce the order of moments. Okay, so the last system that I wanted to discuss is ruthenium chloride. So here, ruthenium is 3+, and actually has the same type of electronic configuration as iridium here, with one hole in T2G. This forms a layered honeycomb structure. It shows a zigzag order in zero field. And from various ab initio studies, the proposal is that it contains a p-type term, a gamma term, plus some other further neighbor coupling. Most groups believe that this is ferromagnetic. That seems to be the consensus. And also gamma has a certain sign. And in terms of magnitude, gamma is about 50% of this. So one can grow large single crystals of this material, and also one doesn't have to deal with absorption issues, so one can do inelastic neutron scattering experiments. So all of a sudden, you know, there's access to much more information. So this is very actively studied. And so in zero field, it orders magnetically the same as this, the zigzag pattern. And there are characteristic spin wave excitations that are seen at low energies associated with this. But there's also some continuous scattering that's seen at higher energies. And there are currently two interpretations put forward to explain the continuum scattering. One is that it is really due to neutrons scattering from so creating two fluxes. Plus one Majorana as the leading scattering process. That's what one would expect if one was to have the pure model. The other interpretation is that, in fact, this continuum is due to two magnon and higher magnon excitations of the zigzag order. So, I draw schematically here the Brillouin zone. So, these are kind of the endpoints where you see breath peaks. And this is the gamma point. So, and then in energy, this is gamma. This is a continuum scene here, close to gamma, and then some dispersive mode here that's seen around these points. And the question is, what is this continuum? One proposal is that the perturbations that are added to stabilize the order affect only the very low energies to stabilize magnetic crack peaks and low energy spin waves. And at high energies, the system is robust, and you see the genuine physics with Majoranas. And the other scenario that's being discussed is that this has a more conventional interpretation, and it's in fact due to the to decay of the one magnon when it overlaps with two magnon continua. And such processes are allowed here because of the low symmetry of the model.
Is there a sharp distinction between those two scenarios? It sounds a little bit like what Lucille was saying earlier. Maybe there's no sharp distinction.
At the moment, I would say it's not. It may be a quantitative issue, and maybe if it was. But we're looking at details, and really the question is the terms that. So, the response is not known precisely by the time you add these terms. And it's possible that the distinction between the models could actually be due to not putting the precise Hamiltonian in, or not solving it precisely enough. So there's a fundamental theoretical issue whether once you go sufficiently deep in the ordered phase, should you even expect a high energies to see signatures of this proximate phase, but which is some distance away. And then whether you experimentally can tell the difference between a more conventional interpretation or this more exotic signature. Now, it's possible that this model being strongly frustrated, even though you add these terms, is slightly more robust. Who knows, and there may be still signatures out there. I think this is still very active research. Now, so this could be two flux plus one Majorana, or two magnons plus other higher for the excitation. Now, the behavior in magnetic field is also very interesting. So, in magnetic fields applied in the honeycomb plane, the phase diagram looks like this. So this is field, this is Tn, approximately 7 Kelvin here. And then the zigzag order is suppressed round about 7 tesla. And so this is for fields applied along this direction, one line along, in some hexagon Maxi's notation. So, and this is seen in diffraction experiments where the magnetic crack peaks disappear. So, the question is, what is this region out here? And also in magnetization, it's increasing, has a sort of higher slope here, and then keeps increasing actually, even at 60 tesla, is not saturated. But we understand that because this has strongly anisotropic couplings. So, at least two scenarios are being considered at the moment. So if we consider the pure Kitai model, this is pure Kitai, ferromagnetic Kitai, let's be specific. The phase diagram, if one was to add some Heisenberg coupling, has been looked at numerically, and this is a field applied along a particular direction, which is 111 in cubic axis. The phase diagram looks like this. So you have some nail phase here. This is some striping antiferromagnet. And from the gapless point that you had in zero field, this point, once you apply a field, you go into a gapped spin liquid. And there's a finite transition field between this and the quantum parameter, which is then continuously connected to the full polarizer. So magnetization going up this way increases, and here has an anomaly, and then keeps on increasing. But there is a very sharp transition between the spin liquid, which has topological character, and all the structure of Majoranas and so on, and the quantum paramagnet, which is really a polarized state dressed with some fluctuations, where the excitations are spin flips that are dressed with some fluctuations, and in neutron scattering you see them as a sharp mode. So there's a very clear transition between these two things. Now, imagine that the real material, okay, would have some additional perturbations, okay, like this gamma term and some further neighbor coupling. And there have been proposals that if you just have the gamma term, you maintain the spin liquid nature of the ground state. So, hypothetically, let's consider that we start with Kitai plus gamma, and this is also in the spin liquid phase. And then we add the perturbation J3 to stabilize the zigzag order. So this would have to be some finite value to destroy the spin liquid, and then there will be a phase boundary light that would go up this way, where this would be a field. So stronger J3s would stabilize JZZ, they need a higher field to destroy that. Now, along this axis, let's assume that there is indeed, when you apply a field, the spin liquid state is stable up to a certain value, up to here. So, this is the spin. Now, this point has to be part of a phase boundary line that has to evolve in this plane. And as we've discussed earlier with Leon this morning, as thinking that this is added perturbatively, certainly here when there's no magnetic ordering, you have a polarization along the field direction, but J3 being anti-ferromagnetic would actually decrease that. So this could be expected to actually go up, at least initially. But certainly, there will be some base boundary that's linked at this point. And then let's say maybe it goes something like that. Now the question for experiments is, where does the actual material lie? So if the actual material lies here, then you go from the zigzag to the quantum paramagnet in a single transition, and there's no spin liquid region. The other possibility that's been considered is that the actual material is here. So you suppress the zigzag, you go into a spin liquid that's characteristic of the material without the perturbation that stabilizes zigzag order. And then there's another transition to the trivial paramagnet. So as a function of, so this was temperature and this was field, then in case one, the phase diagram would look like this. So this will be zigzag, this will be a critical field where the zigzag order disappears, and then there will be another critical field, DC2, where you have a transition from the spin liquid to the quantum paramagnet. So this transition must occur at zero temperature because these are fundamentally different. This has topological character, this doesn't. And then the question would be whether this transition is, if it's first order, then it would really survive up to finite temperature. But if it's second order, it wouldn't need to survive to finite temperature, but then a gap must close there. So one would expect that there's some gap that closes at DC2. And one would expect that in either case, by doing thermodynamic measurements this way, one would expect to find signatures of a second transition. Now in scenario two, which is a more conventional type of behavior, then you would simply suppress the zigzag order and then you would stabilize the quantum paramagnet as a direct transition. And this is what one would expect, for example, if one was to treat this Hamiltonian as a mean field level. So you'd expect that in the quantum paramagnet phase, there's a gapped mode that comes down and closes gap here, and at the point where it closes gap, crack peaks emerge, and that's how you get the zigzag order. So this is scenario two, and that's scenario one. So, any questions?
Sorry. Is there any reason you draw a Dalton line for the phase boundary? Is there any reason it doesn't end before the zigzag phase?
Oh, this could go down like this, you think?
Yeah, can I?
Maybe. I mean, Leo, do you want to comment on that?
It's conceptually possible. Maybe in the simplest theoretical approach, it would not do that.
Since adding the field actually will destroy the zigzag order and the stable lines.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's too detailed of a level to go into, but I mean, I could talk to you.
I think the fundamental idea here is that there are some other terms in the Hamiltonian which stabilize an ordered phase. Now, with the applied magnetic field, it seems that at least phenomenologically, we can suppress that. And the question is that by the time we've suppressed it, have we put enough of a perturbation that we've taken the system even further away from where we want it to be? Or somehow, by applying the field, we've suppressed the effect of the perturbations, and maybe the physics that would have been there originally, but was masked by the perturbation, actually has a chance to manifest itself. Now, there will be, I think, very specific experimental signatures in either case, and this is work in progress. I mean, certainly the second transition has not been seen. And it will be very interesting to see it.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Of more general nature? Do I understand correctly that the third dimension is just a hassle? And if you have a two-dimensional crystal in two-dimensional, the system is less likely to slip into an ordered phase?
So here the ordering doesn't have to break a continuous, it would break a discrete symmetry, spins would order in the zigzag fashion, up or down. So one would expect to have a finite temperature phase transition being a 2D Ising model.
Are you saying
if it was
liquids do not exist in two dimensions?
Sorry?
Are you saying that spin liquids would not exist in two dimensions?
Well, no, I mean, the Kitai model exists in two dimensions.
And it exists in three dimensions.
So I think you're asking a very general question, and
okay, let's specify.
Is it a hassle? So, I don't know. I mean, certain types of spin liquids have kind of very natural existence in both two and three dimensions. There are some others which only exist in three dimensions. So, I would say, you know, there's not just one type of spin liquid state. There are many types. And we know some which are actually only stable in three dimensions, not two. So, in that sense, there's certainly that type of physics one.
I mean Kitai.
But Kitaev, sure, I think the minimal situation is 2D, and it would be probably better to have a purely two-dimensional system.
I'm that's why
this for a 3D lattice, doesn't it? You still get the Kitaev. You still get the Kitaev model and the Kitaev the space diagram, don't you?
You can get something like it.
But, I mean, you know, in general, the pure model in 3D just gives you another.
Sure, sure. But I mean, we can never hope to have exactly the pure model. Certainly, you know, decades of quote wisdom, whether it's really wisdom, unclear, but you know, are based on the idea that in higher dimensions, order is more stable. And spin liquids compete against order.
That's what I'm
referring to. And 3D systems are more likely to order. Of course, we have some counterexamples of models that don't do that, but maybe the general trend is reasonable.
But I refer to Kitaev and actually the fact that probably ruthenium chloride is a layered system.
Indeed. Yeah, I figured that's what you're referring to. So, it's, you know, it, certainly very interesting to try to study a single, strictly two-dimensional layer of ruthenium chloride. It's going to be different experimental challenges and figuring out what to measure. But there even are some indications that the ordering in ruthenium trichloride is dependent on the way it's stacked. So, you know, if one's very optimistic, one could imagine that if we removed the three-dimensional interactions completely, it wouldn't work.
Or just as in our community people doing, okay, you can make a three-dimensional system out of non-stack rotationally disarrayed ruthenium chloride. The same experimental techniques, but the system becomes essentially quasi two-dimensional.
Yeah, so I kind of wonder about where we are here. So the I think these are sort of typically what's supposed to be an hour and a half, something like that. So I think we need to kind of move towards a conclusion. I don't know how much more.
I think from my point of view, certainly ketonic materials show very rich physics, even when they're not in the spin liquid phase, the ordered phase. Could be quite unexpected, like counter-rotating spirals. And certainly there's very interesting phenomenology in field. Even this more conventional mechanism actually is quite non-trivial in terms of coming from high field and closing gap with multiple points and so on. So quite interesting phenomenology there. And of course there is the possibility that there could actually be more exotic such that near this critical point, there could be a spin liquid. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for experiments and certainly challenges for theory.
So maybe, Lucille, I think you probably had read a little bit more that you were going to do. But I wonder, did you?
I guess there's some questions that Radu asked already.
That's kind of where I'm asking. A good point to leave this, since we're basically theorists here for the most part.
You can say it.
Just to ask, you know, what are the questions or open directions for theory a little bit? Can we spend a few minutes on that and then wrap up?
Related to what I mentioned before, which was the, you know, in this scenario where you would have created, you know, you would actually be in a zigzag ordered phase, but seeing at higher energy some signatures of Majorana fermions, you know, why would you expect to see such signatures despite, you know, very large perturbations and despite the fact that in the ground state, you wouldn't be in a ketonic spin liquid at all because you would be quite far from the ketonic limit. So, is there a scenario under which at higher energies you would see Majoranas, you know, despite being ordered in a zero field? You know, certainly this question of whether you are actually in this this spin liquid phase actually exists. Intermediate fields. You know, and then there are more, but it's, you know, what actually, but that's more, I guess, a little bit of zoology is asking, you know, what happens theoretically when you add every single one of these. You know, one of these prohibitions where the model is not solved theoretically. So there are some ED for adding a high-level model. There are some classical calculations when you add gamma. there's been some IDMRG for cation plus gamma. But there is certainly, I think, no very general picture of what happens in general, in particular fields.
Do any of these give like a continuum and a branch of?
Well, any time that
you come up with a model and show that this happens.
Well, so I don't know. So if you're asking about the structure factor, so the structure factor has been calculated in the pure cationic model. Has also been calculated by Leon when you actually add perturbation. So in the pure cationic model, you have a gap because flipping a spin, creates two fluxes, and that's gapped. But actually, the model is gapless, right? The Majorana's are gapless. So there are mechanisms in the pure cationic model that suppress the weight. The neutron, the scattering weight in the pure model. But if you break, if you add the gamma term on top of the pure model, then you would restore gaplessness and you would see a gapless spectrum.
But this is only valid in the, still in the spin liquid phase, so it's not.
You don't have the magnons also showing.
Yeah. I mean, given the time, I'm afraid to make much of a comment, but let me just, I'll say in words why it's not obvious. I mean, so we know from various numerical calculations that the cationic spin liquid borders with a pretty small perturbation, pretty small nearest neighbor Heisenberg, or pretty small third neighbor Heisenberg probably borders. And you might think, since the perturbation is small, it's not going to affect the spectrum that much at high energies. That's why you might hope to see these Majorana fermions. On the other hand, kind of conventional picture, if you think about how the system evolves with some parameters, you've got a phase here, which is the spin liquid. You've got another phase. Let's call this the J axis. One phase is spin liquid, at larger J, the ordered phase. They're separated by a quantum critical point. So in between is a quantum critical point, which has this quantum critical fan. And if I'm, if I am in the energy range of the quantum critical fan, I see behavior that's characteristic of the quantum critical point, which is not the spin liquid. It's a totally different object. It's the fan which appears above the ordered phase, not the spin liquid. So it's not obvious. Usual kind of scaling picture suggest you shouldn't see behavior in the spin liquid there. You should, like, if you see anything at energies, higher energies, it should be that quantum critical point. Now there may be reasons, which would probably take longer than the remaining 3 minutes we should probably take to think that you still could see something due to peculiarities of this system, but it's certainly not obvious. This is another question. Revealing it rather than with high temperature, with high field, you reveal the spin liquid. Right. Challenging theoretical questions. These numerical studies are pretty limited, actually, of these models. So mostly exact diagonalization. This one paper on IDMRG, they're limited in what they can tell you. None of these techniques are very good at telling you. No, they don't, basically. They don't tell you about that, really. They don't tell you about excitations. They're kind of ground state techniques. And they're also not very good at telling you what type of spin liquid you have, if you have one. There are other techniques that have been applied to much simpler models that have never really been applied here.
Okay, my question about the entire model. You mentioned that spin flip excitations would be gapped, right, even though the system itself is gapless. So if I have temperature lower.
I mean, the signal looks gapped.
So, my question, yes, if you have a finite temperature cationic model, where temperature is below the gap, so the gapless Majoranas are excited, but the others are not. So, the spin structure factor would be temperature insensitive up to exponentially small corrections, or would you see a signature presence of the Majoranas?
No, not signature.
below the gap.
If temperature is much less than the gap, is that what you're imagining?
Yeah, so the entropy would be sitting in Majoranas.
Yeah.
So that entropy presumably is of spin nature, but nevertheless in the structure factor you see nothing.
That's right. I mean, that's for the exactly solved wheel Kataya model.
Yes.
There's an operator identity that says the spin operator exactly always creates two fluxes plus a Majorana. So the minimum energy excitation you can create is this 2 delta kind of gap for these. There just can't be weight below there. That gap is small. That's what she didn't really mention, but you know, in the Kataya model, that the flux gap is actually a very small fraction of the Kataya exchange. So the Majorana dispersion is pretty big. It's several times the Kataya exchange. And the gap is like, I don't know, 5%, 10% of the Kataya exchange. So even though there's a gap, you know, the lower energy region that you're asking about is very low. Maybe that there's kind of an intermediate range where the temperature is still pretty small compared to the Majorana dispersion, but not compared to this gap, which is a funny regime. People like Motoman explore.
I put a proposal out. No.
Yes. Yeah, I confirm. All in favor?
No. Thank you. Thank you very much.